Wonderful. All right, guys. Welcome to this coaching call. We are Wednesday, August 4th of 2010. My name is Dave Roll, and I am joined today by my two friends, powerlifter Mike Westerdahl from Florida and Elliot Hulse from Florida as well. Elliot is a pro strongman. And so today, again, we received a few questions, actually a lot of questions, from our readers over the past 2 days. Go through these questions first, and then as I open the lines later on, if we've got a little bit of time, we get a 90-minute limit again. Guys, Mike and Elliot, thank you for being on the call tonight. Really appreciate that. Guys, can you tell us a little bit about yourselves? You know, what's your background, what do you do, and so on. Mike, we can start with you, maybe.
Yeah, sure. I live in Tampa Bay area. Elliot and I met working on a project for lean hybrid muscle. Wound up becoming friends when I hurt my back, and he was helping me with that. And we combined some of powerlifting with his strongman training and did a lot of resistance cardio. My background, I'm the owner of criticalbench.com also. Basically do workout programs on the internet for people and publish one of the internet-based muscle building sites. And that's what I'm up to right now. I'm also an amateur powerlifter.
All right. Elliot.
Yo, I guess my background is in athletics. I played high school and college football, student athletic scholarship for football. After that, I studied exercise physiology and did a shitload of internships throughout the nation and with some of the best experts in strength and conditioning and holistic health, and have just been obsessed with the idea of becoming the absolute, reaching my potential and teaching, and then eventually teaching people how to reach their absolute potential in strength and health and fitness and in multiple areas of life. I opened a gym in 2000 and, 3 years ago, so 2007, in St. Petersburg, Florida, after I moved here from New York, and that's where I train athletes, and I train guys who want to reach their potential also, using a lot of a combination of strongman, powerlifting, and bodybuilding training, which is really the foundation for our lean hybrid muscle program that Michael described. And I guess that's it, man. I like talking about this stuff, and this is what I do. It's who I am. And let's get to the questions.
What about you, Dave? I want to hear your background.
Everybody knows me. All my listeners know me.
Yeah, but I might be setting this interview out later for a bonus or something. So
exactly.
Put me on the spot.
So my background, basically, I started about 10 years ago. My bodybuilding career, if I can say that. I got a nutrition background, and I'm a personal trainer as well. Right now, I'm the owner of the anabolic cooking.com and musclecook.com websites. So basically what I do, I help people with their nutrition a lot. I help people with their training, their goals in general. I also train elite athletes, fitness models, bodybuilders, any kind of athletes, but I really focus on more on the bodybuilding and fitness niche. Other than that, I'm a competitive bodybuilder. I've competed in four shows, I'm sorry. I competed in four bodybuilding shows, won actually a couple of them, and my last one was in Lab the past April. And other than that, you know, I'm a foodie. I love food. I actually designed the Anabolic Cooking Cookbook, which has 200 of my best recipes. And this is what I do best. So I try, you know, to help people with that aspect of fitness and training. And that's it about me, guys.
Well, sounds like we have the perfect hybrid athlete on the call tonight. We got a strongman, a powerlifter, and a bodybuilder.
What? Perfect.
That's a cool thing about this call. We have actually the three, you know, main areas of bodybuilding and fitness. Pretty much, like, we got, you know, powerlifting, bodybuilding, and strongman reunited. So that's going to make it for a good call. And actually, that's going to lead us to the first question, guys. And that's going to be cool because we can compare actually our styles of training. It's a question from Steve, and Steve's asking, how many days a week do you lift? What kind of body part split do you prefer? So, Mike, can you tell us a little bit more about, like, how you train for powerlifting? What split do you use, body parts? Like, how do you manage your training for powerlifting?
Well, for powerlifting, I'm kind of a power builder, too, so I do care what I look like as well. So
exactly.
We don't always do body part splits. We split up our days by actually the lifts. So we've got three main days for powerlifting. One's a squat day, one's a bench day, and one's a deadlift day. Then you usually add in a fourth day where you'll do different auxiliary or supplemental exercises, and those are some of the more body parts that you missed. But with those three main lifts, you hit most of the body parts, and then you can just go and hit everything else on like a fourth day. That's how many days I actually am purely weight training. I'm in a four-day split. One day is deadlift, one day is bench, one day is squat, and then the fourth day is like makeup day with a bunch of random bodybuilding exercises.
Okay, more isolation exercise, I guess, on the fourth day.
Yeah, you might do some more like going in on the triceps or hitting some lateral raises, things like that.
Exactly. And yeah, you're a big fan of power building, actually. That's something, you know, we hear you a lot talking about, the power building, the fact of, you know, being strong like a powerlifter, but as well, you know, look like a bodybuilder, because the base, pretty much like the base of getting bigger, to get bigger, basically, you need to get stronger. And
that's my belief. I mean, there's a question later on, too, where that's one thing I want to say. Put out kind of a little disclaimer about here. There's certain just laws that are true and factual, but a lot of these questions just come out down to different people's opinions. We may all not agree, or we may agree on things, and that doesn't mean it's the only answer. Somebody else could have the exact opposite way of doing something and still get results. So these are things that I've seen that have worked for me and have worked for clients of mine. I'm kind of a big believer that when you're pushing yourself to get stronger, that you get muscle growth as a reaction of that. But I don't just lift with just the low reps. I like to supplement with higher reps on some of the supplemental exercises. So for the main compound movements, I'll do heavier reps with sets of five reps or lower. But then when I go in and start isolating on the muscles, then I'll try to hit that muscle growth zone too and do a little bit higher reps for those body parts.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm a big believer in that approach as well. I think, you know, like, in my personal experience, the stronger I was, the bigger I got. But then again, you're absolutely right. You need to incorporate different, you know, types of exercises in that approach of training. So that, I think that's a great way of thinking. Actually, that's what your critical band is all about, right, Mike?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're getting stronger, and then at the same time, you're trying to get bigger. You're doing both at the same time, and that's by trying to lift heavier weight, moving more weight. The more weight you move, your body has to adapt. It has to get stronger, and that's how you grow muscle. But then you follow that up with bodybuilding style exercises and rep schemes as well to kind of make a hybrid program out of it. It's actually kind of similar to the lean hybrid muscle program that Ellie and I put together too. The question was, how many days a week do you lift? But we also, I do cardio. I mean, it's kind of a stereotype that powerlifters don't do much cardio. They just go and max out all the time. But being a hybrid power builder, you know, the cardio is definitely important. And I'm a big fan of the resistance cardio. That's where you're, you know, doing cardio with weights. And you can do that, you know, with lighter weights and make it pretty easy just for more conditioning. Or you can turn it into like a max effort cardio exercise. So I like to even have one day a week of something like that. I mean, luckily, Elliot's gym is nearby. I'm probably only like 15 minutes from him, and we work together. I'm down there a couple days a week. So if I get a chance, I like to use some of those cool strongman things he has down there. Like, he's got prowlers and sleds and all kinds of cool stuff you can do. Or if I don't feel like driving down there, I might do like a kettlebell workout in my garage one day a week. But I'll do it much lighter and try to get more of the fat-burning effect. So I want to, you know, keep my flexibility, keep my heart rate going, stay healthy, and try to keep my body fat in check. I actually don't have any goals of trying to get to the body fat level you were at the show. I mean, that I think takes a tremendous amount of commitment and dedication and an iron mind to stick with a strict diet like that. So you know, that's not what I'm trying to get stronger and keep a good, you know, maybe like 10% body fat would be a goal for me.
That's still a very good goal. Like, I mean, 10% body fat means, you know, you're going to see a well-defined six-pack already. So, I mean, that's a very decent goal. What'd you say?
Maybe 12% then.
I think you can do 10. You've been there. But anyway, no, I really agree with everything, and I really like your approach, actually. And I got kind of a breaking news right now for my listeners, that next week I'm going to be featuring a lot of information about power building on my blog and probably on my YouTube videos channel. Mike is going to provide me a lot of information about power building, and actually we got a very, very cool something for you as well. That we got set up. I cannot talk about it right now, but it's pretty cool, and I'm pretty sure you guys are going to love it. So stay tuned next Tuesday. Check your emails. We got something coming for you guys.
Yeah, they've got a bunch of blackmail photos and videos from some of our trips together, so I'm kind of nervous. I don't know exactly what he's going to release on me. So.
That's exactly. I got to say it. I got compromising videos of Mike. Dancing to single ladies.
Hey, we were at a wedding and I had a couple drinks.
Yeah, you did. But no, that was fun. Elliot, what about you, man? What's your approach of training? How do you train usually for strongmen in general and everything?
Well, obviously it depends on what the goal is for the training. So if I'm training for strongmen, it's going to be a lot of event training. So that can end up being like 6 days a week. I'll start with like a push, typically like a log press on Monday. My weakest event has typically been the press, so I'll start with that in the earliest part of the week after like a day off or so. So typically a log press and then auxiliary exercises after that. And then the rest of the week is just picking up on events that are a bit weaker, building up to the ones that are stronger, so like maybe yoke on Tuesday and auxiliary exercises for that, and farmer carries on Wednesday. So that's, with regard to strongman training, that's the way I've designed my program. Now, I know most of the people on this call are not professional strongmen, and that's not necessarily what they're trying to do. Currently, because I've injured my bicep in April, I am not training for strongman. So the way my program looks is, again, a five-day-a-week program, but I'm doing something similar in that it's full body workout every single day, but it's, to make a long story short, 5-6 days a week, and I'll take off 1 or 2 days at the most. I am addicted to training, so I freaking love doing it. So if I have to take a day off, I say like this, if I got to take a day where I don't sweat, I'm going to be depressed. So I've got to be outside sucking oxygen and sweating every single day. I might take a day or two off during the week, but I'm doing some every day.
Lucky for you, it's 100 degrees out today.
Didn't take much.
Yeah, you're right. It's pretty hot out there in Florida these days. All right, good stuff, Elliot. Thank you, man. Thanks for sharing. I'm going to, you know, tell what pretty much my approach is, but I vary my workouts. I'm a big believer of variation in my workouts. Usually I keep my workouts, my routines for about, you know, anywhere between 4 to 8 weeks, depending on the type of training. Right now, what I do, actually, I work out for the summer. What me and my friend Remy, what we do is we work out every day. So we work out single body parts. We start with chest, all right? It's very intense, and we work a lot with drop sets, all right? So we got a lot of drop sets going on, and we work every day. So that would be, for example, Monday chest, Tuesday we work out our back, then legs on Wednesday, then arms and shoulders on Thursday, and then we go back to chest on Friday. And we just keep going that way. We keep our sets at about, I would say, about 12 sets overall. That counts the drop sets. Well, that doesn't count the drop set, I mean. So it might add up to a little bit more with the drop sets. And then we finish a lot with lighter weights, but we do a lot of supersets. So basically what we do, we choose two exercises. For example, for chest, we would choose pec deck and cable crossover, and we will go back and forth until we do about 4 to 5 sets each. So that's just a finishing exercise. So we really kill the muscle. Those are pretty intense workout. They last for about 35 minutes, but they're very intense. That's how we work right now. Sometimes I go more in a powerlifting style in the winter time, training only like three low volume, 3 to 4 days a week. Sometimes I'm just, you know, very differently, incorporate more body weight exercise. I vary a lot, you know, my workouts a lot. But again, I'm a big fan of the power building type of workouts that Mike was talking about. I love lifting heavy weights. I love, you know, intense workouts, and usually I love, you know, I tend to see more results overall when I lift heavier weights. But that being said, I love the intensity as well. Keep my metabolism going. And I try to incorporate cardio as well, at least twice a week, you know, when I'm heavily building muscle, let's say. Other than that, I try, you know, at least, you know, 4 to 5 times if I can. Preferably sometimes post-workout, I incorporate about, you know, between 15 and 20 minutes of cardio after my workouts. But again, I vary my workouts a lot. If you've been a subscriber, you know, if you've been reading my newsletter, you've probably noticed that I incorporate a lot of different types of exercises in my routines. And I'm a fair believer that variation is the key when it comes to training. Just same thing for nutrition, you know. So again, vary your workouts. That's the best key. But usually, you know, the power building type of exercise, I'm really a big fan of that. And very intense hardcore workouts. That's the way I like to train. So that's it for me.
Cool. What do you do for your cardio? You said 15 minutes or so.
Actually, Mike, we're gonna save that because we got a question about cardio later on. So we probably want to keep this one for later. I got a question about Sharita now. She asks us, as a young woman interested in bodybuilding, what advice would you give for a beginner with no knowledge of weightlifting and someone who is overweight? That's a very good question. And sometimes, if you don't mind, guys, I'm going to start with this one. I find it's sometimes it's overwhelming. You know what I mean? Like when you start, you get a lot of information online. You're going to get a lot of information. The key, I would say, is to stick to simple rules. You know what I mean? Get yourself a basic program to start with. You know what I mean? Don't get involved in something too complicated. Just take the time to introduce yourself to the sport of bodybuilding in general. When you talk about bodybuilding, I mean, we're talking about building your body, not necessarily the competitive aspect of bodybuilding. But really, you know, take one step at a time, you know, start with basic information, you know, start with a basic program, a good sound nutrition plan, and don't get overwhelmed with all the information you got. The more you're going to get involved in the sport itself, the more you're going to learn about it. So again, and if you're overweight, you know, I would just concentrate on a basic weight training routine, do your cardio, and do your own homework as far as nutrition goes. Again, that can be very complicated. If I can give you some basic guidelines, if you're overweight, try to stick to a low carbohydrate type of diet, you know, high to moderate protein intake, high to moderate fats, and lower your carbohydrates and keep your carbohydrates sources as low glycemic index sources, things like oatmeal, sweet potatoes, even any whole wheat, you know, products or brown rice, for example. Those are good, you know, carbohydrates. Get them in small quantities, mostly in the first half of your day. But again, stick to something basic. Invest maybe in a good, you know, program. I know, for example, well, I know you guys, your program is a little bit more advanced, but something, you know, very simple, like for beginners, like Joey Vaillancourt, for example, has, while you're a woman, he's more targeted into men, but Joey Vaillancourt has a good program for beginners called Bones to Buff. It's bonestobuffprogram.com. It's a very good program. He has actually a woman can use it absolutely. You have basic workouts, basic nutrition plans as well there. He explains everything, everything well. So that's a very good starting point. What advice would you have for Sharita, guys?
Sure, I'll jump in. First, as far as interested in bodybuilding, I'm assuming she's just talking about getting interested into working out and not competing. She said she's a beginner and she's overweight right now. So initially what I'm going to say, I don't know what her budget is. There's a lot of different variables and things. So assuming she doesn't have a lot of money and she's busy like most people are, and she's new to any kind of weight training, definitely I would say start with some kind of walking every day. I think that would help a lot. The main thing you don't want to do is just jump too fast into something that's completely too hard and overwhelming, because you might maybe stick it out for like a week or two, but then you're just going to give up and be right back where you started. So I think get into something that can be a lifestyle, something that you think you can live with, and just keep building on those blocks. For a beginner, I would think even trying some body weight programs or just getting a pair of dumbbells or just a pair of kettlebells and doing some full body workouts using, you know, trying to get better at your rest intervals, adding some walking in. And then I'm not sure what this person's nutrition or diet is like, but just try to use some common sense. Try to eat, you know, fresh foods. Try not to eat all the processed things that come in the boxes and the cans. If you can just try to cut out sugars and processed foods and start drinking a gallon of water a day and start eating a lot of vegetables, and make sure, a lot of people don't even realize what they're eating. Like, make sure you're not eating just carbs all day long. Try to make sure you get some kind of animal in every meal, some kind of protein along with some vegetables, and drink your water, start walking, and then if you have the money, go meet with a trainer and just learn a program till you can do it on your own. Or, you know, check out some of these. We got like Lean Hybrid Bodyweight Program coming out. There's another dumbbell program on criticalbench.com you can check out. And there's all different levels for these. They show you how to do all the exercises. And just try to make a habit out of this and do something that you can live with, that can become a lifestyle choice for you.
Yeah, you said it, Mike. Like, the lifestyle part is very important. You know, like, don't, like, if you're into it, like, very commit to the lifestyle, you know, not something that you're going to stick to it for a couple of weeks, then, you know, toss away. You really need to tailor the lifestyle approach of it and start, you know, get the knowledge. You know, with overwhelm, there's a lot of information. Again, just start with basic information and build, you know, your knowledge database. And as Mike said, you know, start with the most basic things, such as, you know, incorporating some maybe fruits, more fruits and veggies in your diet, cut the process for the excess sugar you could get and everything. Mike?
Yep.
Something to add for Sharita, or?
You kind of broke up there. Were you talking to me?
We're just caught you now, asking if you had any tips for a beginner that's trying to learn.
Yeah, look, if you're a beginner, first of all, if you're overweight and now you're beginning something new, you've got a crap load of hurdles to overcome, regardless of the technical aspects of what you need to do. The very first thing is you've got to become very clear about what you want. See, most people who are overweight kind of want to lose weight. Like, it's a nice idea, I'd like to lose a little bit of weight. But if you're not absolutely 100% clear, have a vision about what you want to establish with regard to your new body, your new lifestyle, the new you. You cannot be who you are. My phone's beeping. Excuse me. You can't be who you are currently and have the results that you want to have. You've got to completely change every aspect of your life. You've got to change your mind. You have to change your habits. You have to change the people you associate with. I mean, that's a big one, because if you're associating with the same people who the fat version of you is associating with, they're going to want to know what the hell is going on when you decide to make different choices with regard to your diet, when you choose to make different choices with regard to your exercise. I mean, like, if you're hanging out with fat people in the office all day long and you're fat, and one day you decide that you want to get up and take a walk during your lunch break and you're going to have a salad, they're all going to look at you like you're out of your mind. So they're going to do their best to try to pull you back into the version of yourself that they're most comfortable with. So the people you associate with has to change. So becoming very clear is the most important thing. Get very clear on what your goal is. Do you want to be like 137 pounds, or I have no idea what you weigh, but make a very clear commitment about what you want, and then surround yourself with all of the things that are associated with you being that way. That means pictures, that means people, that means ideas. Listen to calls like this, read books, just completely immerse yourself in a world that's associated with the brand new you. And that's going to take the second step. So the first step is commitment. The second will be commitment. The first one's clarity. I'm freaking talking over myself. The second one's commitment. And the commitment basically is just knowing that there's absolutely no way that you're going to go back to the fat version of you. It just doesn't exist any longer. You no longer associate with the idea of the fat version of you. You are just not that person anymore. And if anybody or anything gets in the way of that, you've got to completely block it or just cut it out of your life. And then it's the discipline to just take the steps every single day. All the things that Dave and Mike just described, all those things, that they're cool, they're great, they make sense, they're nice tactics. But if you're not disciplined enough to instill them, to do them, to implement them on a daily basis, especially when you don't want to and when the people around you are against what you're doing, they're confused about what you're doing, they're trying to pull you back into the version of yourself that they're comfortable with, you've got to persevere. You've got to be disciplined. You've got to be persistent. So regardless of what exercise program you decide to choose, regardless of what diet plan you decide to choose, if you are not absolutely clear, committed, and disciplined to becoming that version of yourself, the leaner, thinner, more beautiful version of yourself, then it's just not going to happen. So we could talk to a little blue in our face about what you need to do on the treadmill and what you need to do in your refrigerator and in your kitchen, but it makes absolutely no sense until you get those aspects lined up, straightened out, and committed to.
Awesome. Yeah, you absolutely. I especially agree with the fact that, you know, you need to surround yourself with people who have the same interests as you got, or, you know, or support, you know, your initiative of changing. And that's very important. And that's been, anyway, for me personally, that's been one of the key points, you know, to my success as far as, you know, training or bodybuilding goes, but as well as my whole life in general and my business, for example. I surrounded myself with people who had a positive attitude, and people were looking to move forward, you know. So if you surround yourself, if you surround yourself with losers, you're going to be a loser. That's as simple as that. So surround yourself with people who have a positive influence on you, and the ones who have a negative influence, just, you know, erase them from your life, period. Like, I'm not taking any, you know, half measures with it. I think, you know, you need to surround yourself with the best people you can get around you, and that's as simple as that. So very good tip, Elliot. Very good. Okay, we're going to move to the other question. Actually, Elliot, that one actually probably you can answer the more accurately to it. It's a question from Jeff, and Jeff's saying, I'm experiencing noise and slight pressure, not pain, in my right elbow when doing pushing exercises with a narrow grip and hands in a hammer position, palms facing each other, push up on the iron gym door gym pull-up bar. I can hear a slight click-click during the close grip push-up in a quiet room. The sound will accompany a weakness, pressure, instability at the bottom of the push-up the compression. More background. I feel the pain on the forearm side of my elbow, below the joint, and towards the bottom of the arm. Rear of the arm is standing erect with arms at the side. I own critical bench, but no access to a gym and bench for the moment. When I follow the correct benching form while doing push-ups, slightly wider grip, back arch, chest activated, traps tight, I don't hear anything or feel anything out of sorts in my elbows. From that small description, do you think I'm looking at a major problem I need to have checked out? Perhaps only a brace of some sort. or just avoid a specific movement. I'm 41 years old, 5'4" tall, 135 pounds. This is my first year getting in shape.
Hey, Dave, you mind if I crack at it? Because Elliot's just going to nail it. So I just want to guess at what I think it is, and then he can kind of come in with the right answer afterwards.
All right, go ahead, Mike.
Well, he's got all the Czech background, and he's done, like, the physical therapy. He knows all about muscle imbalances, so he's probably got a pretty good idea to what this is. But I actually just did a phone interview with Jed Johnson from Diesel Crew, and this kind of sounds – I'm not a doctor, so I'm just kind of guessing here. And, yeah, you should go to a doctor and find out what it is for sure. But what the doctor's probably going to tell you is don't do stuff that hurts. And he might give you some medicine to cover up the pain, which isn't going to help the solution. And if it's really bad, you might have to tell you you're going to get surgery. So if you can try to fix it on your own, I would definitely try to do a few things and see if it gets any better. And from what this sounds like, I'm not sure if I'm picturing exactly where he's saying that it hurts, but it kind of just sounds like tendonitis. And actually, Lee Hayward did a pretty cool video on this too, and I started trying this, and Jed said the same thing, and my tendonitis went away from doing this one exercise. It seems like we're overtraining a bit and causing some tendonitis in that one muscle in the forearm, and if you do the extensors instead on your grip, we're always squeezing and we're always using like the hammer curl for benching and stabilizing. So if you have like an open hand, you put that into a 5-pound jug of protein that's filled up maybe halfway with sand. I'm not sure how much that's going to weigh. And then you keep your hands wide open and flexed inside of the protein jug, and you just hold it there for time. And then what Jed said to do is to pronate and supinate your hands so you're turning them. And that kind of fixes the imbalance a little bit and alleviates some of the pressure that's built up there. And I did that now for 2 weeks, and my tendonitis has been feeling a lot better. But I'm not sure if that's what this is, but that's something you might want to try and see if it helps. And anything from there, Elliot might want to jump in.
With regard to your injury, yeah. First of all, you say major problem, bro. It's a major problem is like when your left arm goes numb, and you got to be rushed to the hospital because you're having a heart attack or you're, I don't know, like a piece of your brain falling out of your ear. It's not a major problem if you can't do push-ups. So relax. That would be my first bit of advice would be to just freaking take a Prozac. There's no big deal. Your elbow clicks a little bit. It's not completely unheard of. You're not going to die. The second thing to say would be just don't do it. So you described about two different things out of the myriad, perhaps thousands of things that you can do with your body. And there are two that you have a hard problem doing. So I would tell you don't do it. So obviously I'm being a little facetious, but my point is to work literally with your press, work around that particular movement. So if you can press without doing a close grip or a hammer grip, then do those without the close grip or the hammer grip. Not only because obviously I sound like a dickhead, I'm just kind of like making fun of you, not only because it doesn't hurt, which is like, duh, it doesn't hurt, so that's why you should do it, but because that there is a significant, I think like 60% crossover in range of motion strength, like crossover, that's necessarily the word I was using, crossover, when you use a joint in a range of motion outside of that which there is pain. So long story short, if you do push-ups and you do curls or you do whatever that you're doing in a range of motion that doesn't hurt, eventually it will strengthen and work out the imbalances in the direction that it does hurt. So you're letting that pattern heal itself, and you're strengthening it, making it better by working in the range of motions that sort of surround it. You know what I mean? Like... yeah, just do the things that you can do. Don't do the things you can't do that bother you. It's almost like too simple. I hope you kind of, I hope you don't like gloss over that because it's too simple. But basically, that's it, man. Just don't do what hurts. That's it.
Yeah, maybe if you don't do it for a while, when you go back to it, it'll heal on its own. If it's still hurting after taking a long time off, you might want to get it checked out.
Exactly. I mean, working around, as I said, Mike, that's do it, and Mike and Elliot, those are great tips, guys. Thank you for that. And I agree with that. You know, sometimes, you know, working around the injury seems to be – I never got injured. I got injured actually twice in 10 years. But I got injured once doing shoulder presses, for example. And what I did, I just worked around the injury for quite a while. And, you know, eventually everything falls into place and you recover from the injury and everything's fine. That's what happens most of the time. If that's something, you know, that keeps coming back and keeps coming back, this is where you need to see a specialist more than likely. But again, working around that injury is probably the best way. Might give you some great tips as well, Jeff, so you might want to try it as well and see if that fixes that click noise and the pain associated with it. But again, it's just a matter of trying and seeing, basically.
Also, clicking isn't necessarily bad unless it's causing pain. Like, just because you hear a click, it doesn't really matter unless it hurts.
No, exactly. All right. Another question now from Alan. Alan is asking us, what is the minimum to maintain general fitness and health for the long term? And at what point does the extreme have detrimental effects in later life? How do the right supplement affect this measure? Any kind of exercise, you know what I mean? Like, exercising has an anti-aging effect on the body. Like, I mean, that's no secret. You have tons and tons of research and studies about it that are all going to say the same thing. So any kind of physical activity is going to be good on the long run. All right? So there's no minimum or maximum, of course. I mean, if you're a 60-year-old and you're training like Brent Warren, yeah, you might be, you know, going a little bit too extreme. However, you know, any kind of physical activity, in my opinion, and weight training in general, is, in my opinion, the best way, you know, to stay in shape and keep a good health, you know, for as long as you live. I see a lot of people in the gym, you know, like people who are 70, 80 years old and still lift weights, have a pretty healthy lifestyle, and man, like they're looking great. You wouldn't even know they're 80 years old. So any kind of physical activity, but especially weight training, is not going to hurt at all. Actually, that's the best thing you can do for yourself. Supplements as well. Supplements are supplements. The focus should be nutrition. Good balance, healthy nutrition should be the key, Alan. You shouldn't look like too complicated. Of course, you can supplement very good supplements, like, for example, fish oils. They're great supplements, multivitamins, stuff like that, that are probably going to help on the long run. But the main focus, I was talking about it to earlier on, like offline with one of my friends, and that's the fact that supplements make about, you know, 5 to 10% different, considering that you have a very good nutrition, so that your nutrition is in check. So that's not going to make, you know, the biggest difference. The big difference is going to be your nutrition. So as long as you have good, healthy nutrition, you weight lift on a regular basis, you know, like you're putting all the longer, healthier life. Guys.
Yeah, who's up?
Hello? Are you there?
That? Yeah.
All right, I'll go. Did you want to...
No, I'm sorry. Like, my phone was breaking up. Were you guys talking to me?
We're talking about Alan, and he was asking his question about, you know, how to make
With longevity. Yeah. Right. I'm sorry. It seems like my phone cuts off exactly when you say my name. All right. Yeah. Here's my thoughts with regard to fitness, health, and longevity, because that's what it sounds like you're saying. First, I want to make a clear distinction that there is a big difference between what we quote-unquote call fitness and what is true health. So you could look really healthy. You could have, like, really low body fat and muscles coming out of every pore and crevice of your body and not necessarily be healthy. So if what you're asking is how can I achieve longevity with regard to health, then I have to give you a totally different answer than how do I look lean well into my old age. So I'm going to assume that your question is, and let me look at the questions real quick here. You don't mention your age. So I'm going to assume that your question is more geared towards health and longevity. So if that's your question, the very absolute paramount with regard to that is keeping your stress levels low. And what I mean by that is it's your level of perception with regard to what's going. First of all, your level of perception with regard to what's going on in your life. So just taking a paradigm where things don't necessarily affect your emotions every single time they happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, for example, I watched a video on YouTube not too long ago by Jack LaLanne. It was in black and white. And he must have been like in his 30s or 40s, and it was in black and white. I mean, that tells you a lot about the guy. He's probably 100 now. He's still alive. His wife looks great, and they're probably still boning. And in his video, he talks about how he recently went to South America or Central America somewhere, like Guatemala perhaps. And these people were dirt poor. They had nothing, and they were all riding together with him on a bus in, you know, like on a dirt road somewhere. And suddenly, a woman who was nursing her baby right there on the bus, baby sucking on her tit, just like it naturally should be, and she breaks into song. She just starts singing in a native language. And the rest of the bus, they all start singing along with her. These are people who had, like, tattered clothing, perhaps had one meal, if that, for the day, and they were joyfully singing along with this woman who broke into song sporadically in a third world country. And he was just amazed, and he was like, well, this is amazing. These are happy, healthy people because of their perspective with regard to their circumstances. They chose to be happy. That is just, that's, I mean, with regard to the Western civilization, because I'm assuming that you live either in Europe or you live in the United States, we are overburdened with stress. We're stressed out, sick, sad, and depressed because we've chosen to be. So if you want to live a long, healthy, happy, joyful life, that's a choice. And that's what I'm saying with regard to stress, choosing to think that way, choosing to look at your life through that lens is a choice. That's the very first thing you should have to do if you want to live a long life. And that's kind of what you're asking. You're asking about longevity. The other thing is to reduce the amount of toxic exposure that your body is subjected to. We live in a toxic time. I mean, I went to today. I'm telling you guys stories. Today I went to the health department, the clinic downtown St. Pete. Just not a very cool place to be. I mean, the people there are freaking weird. The reason why I was there is because I have to get a vasectomy. I have four children. Mike will tell you. He saw me. He met my son. Just had my, I have three girls and we just had a boy. So that's it. I'm not having any more kids, so I'm going to get neutered. So I go down to the health department, a place I would never typically go. And the amount of people that are there, I don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about. The amount of people that are there that are dealing with ailments and that they're, where was I going with this freaking story? Sorry, guys.
Choosing.
Toxic exposure. Try your best to reduce the amount of toxic exposure that you have, especially with regard to how it's damaging our sexual health. I think that's the direction I was going in. There are so many guys that, like, have low sperm count. That's where I was going because I was going to get neutered. Low sperm count. They can't have children. There's so many women with, like, rotten eggs. They can't have children. And it's no wonder that so much to do with the amount of plastics, xenoestrogens, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides in our food that are all designed to do what? Neuter pests.
Yeah.
They're designed to make pests not reproduce. And then we eat it. So if you could spend a little bit more on foods that are not as infected with herbicides, pesticides, and fungicides that are designed to sterilize pests, because ultimately they sterilize us, then you'll be in a situation where you won't end up with prostate cancer, because that's, you know, when we start manipulating our hormones, that's what we end up having. All the types of cancers that we're dealing with. Cancers were unknown, like, in the early part of the century. It just didn't exist. And there are certain parts of the people in parts of the world where cancer doesn't exist. And it's because of their reduction of exposure to these toxic chemicals. So that's the first thing I would say with regard to longevity, is reduce the amount of stress and toxic exposure to your body. And then with regard to supplements, Yeah, you're 100% right to ask a question like that because our food sources are so depleted that we have no choice but to supplement with something. If you're eating a whole foods diet at minimum, and if you could take it one step further, if you're eating a significant amount of organic foods, grass-fed beef, then I would supplement alongside with that, because that's the first thing to do before you even start taking supplements. Along with that, start with a fish oil supplement, a green food supplement, and then antioxidants. And that's my opinion with regard to that. Extreme training, if you know me, if you've ever seen my blog, or if you have any idea who I am, I'm a extreme training fanatic. I train till like my blood vessels in my face are going to explode. Not a good choice. Has something to do with my addictive personality. Not a good thing for longevity. Mike and I were talking just the other day about left ventricle hypertrophy, which has a lot to do with the amount of Valsalva maneuver that we're doing when we're lifting like 1,000 pounds. Not good stuff for your health. So as far as extreme training and its effects on your health, yeah, anything in its extreme is detrimental. And it's funny because if you watch my YouTube videos, you wouldn't imagine hearing me say this. But yeah, absolutely. It's the type of exercise that you see people who live long lives, like they have all these theories about why Japanese people live so freaking long. Well, number one, their stress levels are typically a lot lower than ours. But I'm saying Japanese, but even Chinese, they have the martial arts where they're exercising well into their hundreds. I mean, these people are old, and they're doing forms of Tai Chi, Qigong. In India, they're doing yoga. These are exercises and exercise modalities that stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system. This is the side of the nervous system that is associated with reduced stress. It's breathing type exercises. They're slow moving type exercises. And I don't know how old you are, but if you think you're asking these questions, you're probably encroaching your older ages. So these are things that personally I would start thinking about, using those forms of exercise and slowly replacing some of the extreme training if you're doing that.
What did you say, Mike?
I didn't say anything. What am I going to say to that?
That's my rant.
I think he covered that one.
So anyway, guys, I think, Elliot, you're a machine, man. Once Elliot starts explaining something, that guy never stops.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Hey, no, man.
No, those are his famous rants. That's what people like most about him.
That's awesome. I like that. But anyway, you're sure when you ask, you know, Elliot something, you're going to have every possible explanations, you know.
That's why when I had an answer to that one question, I'm like, let me say something real quick. Because Elliot's going to cover every single possible, and there's going to be nothing left to say.
I just like to hear myself talk.
No, you got good stuff. You just cover it so thoroughly and in-depth that there's not much left. Which is good.
Thank you, guys. You guys are just making my dick feel bigger and bigger by the moment.
I don't know if I like that.
Oh,
I'm growing in girth. Thank you.
Anyway, let's move on. We're going to probably get one or two other training questions, and then we're going to move on to some nutrition questions. We got about 40 minutes left, so we're going to try to wrap these questions up. We had a question about cardio that I really wanted to clarify, and we get that asked a lot. What is the best type of cardio? Is high-intensity interval training, HIIT, or which one is the best, HIIT or working at 60-70% of your maximum heart rate?
Well, my answer is, oh, you want to go, Dave?
No, you can go, Mike. We're just going to give her a chance.
I'm going to pick option C, which wasn't listed, which is hybrid cardio, and that's doing cardio with resistance. That's the kind of cardio I think is the best, because then you're with the resistance, you're burning more calories, you also get it done faster, and you're using two different types of muscle fibers at the same time.
Exactly. That's a great type of cardio, Mike. is called metabolic resistance training, and that's the type of cardio actually you're referring to in your lean hybrid muscle program. And
yeah, but I think that word came out after our word.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. That came out after your word.
Yeah.
So, but no, you're absolutely right. You know, training with higher intensity, like you said, incorporate that type of training really helps building cardio. So you don't have, you know, you can work out that way and actually build muscle and lose body fat. And that's something, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's hard to do both. But if you have the right approach to training, you can absolutely do both. That's absolutely possible. And actually, you guys proved it in your program. Elliot, what do you have to add anything to it, like for your favorite type of cardio?
What was that? Did you hear somebody say invalid option?
What type of, the best type of cardio? Like, I got a question
about
the best type of cardio.
Here's the deal. It depends on what your goal is. So I hate cardio, to tell you the truth. I'd rather jump and lift heavy shit. But depending on the goal, like jogging, like I read on Facebook recently that Mike jogged 3 miles today. Is this true, Michael?
I did do it.
Wow.
You jogged 3 miles, didn't you? You're supposed to be a power lifter, for God's sakes.
Hey, I'm a hybrid athlete.
Well, jogging 3 miles, beyond just like, you're going to burn some calories. And obviously, I'm going to take it one step further. You're going to burn some calories while you're doing cardio. And of that nature, jogging at 60-70%. And as the HIIT guys say, and which I do believe, when you do those sprint intervals with short rest intervals in between, that you end up burning calories longer than when you are actually working out. Both of those are true. And in my opinion, with regard to fat loss, because you're not really just stating what your purpose here is, you just want to know what the best type of cardio is. I can't tell you because I don't know what the hell you're trying to do. But as far as fat loss is concerned, I really do believe that HIIT training, it will be better. That's probably because I like doing it better. But I'd give a thumbs up to HIIT training.
Well, compare a marathon runner to a sprinter. Just look at the way they look.
Yeah, absolutely right. They're just burning way too many calories. Those initiated joggers, they look sick and depressed. But there's validity. I just wanted to say that, you know, there's validity to jogging 3 miles, Mike. You're not all that evil.
I haven't done it in like 3 years. It's one of those things that's like, hey, can I still? It was more like, can I do this? It's not part of my regular routine. It was more like a little test.
Well, if you've done it in the past, then I'm sure you have. There's something like magical about jogging for a long period of time. I don't know what it is, but the first time I did it, like after I tore my bicep and I decided, well, maybe I should just kind of chill out and jog a little bit. First time I did it, there was just like an amazing energy that took over. I was just like super energetic afterwards. I felt good. I felt centered. I felt calm. I felt relaxed. So there's that runner's high. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but like a lot of long-distance runners, they describe this runner's high where there's endorphins released into the bloodstream. My idea is that it's the stimulation of the parasympathetic nervous system, which could be also done with like Tai Chi and yoga and the things we spoke about before. But there's like a meditative and calming and centering capacity to doing long-distance cardio. So I want to say that I do acknowledge and I do believe that there's good to come from doing long-distance cardio. But if you're looking to burn fat, which I assume that's what it is, I'm just in a ranting mood, then HIIT training gets my thumbs up.
Yeah, and I was at my leanest during college playing football when we were doing all, you know, the high-intensity interval training, a lot of sprints and quickness and stuff. Didn't go on a lot of long jogs then. So I definitely think there's some merit to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you guys, like, what I do, and actually that's a bit different. I pretty much incorporate every type of cardio when I try. For example, when I try to lose body fat, I'm going to take the example of when I diet for a bodybuilding show. What I do in the morning, my routine, usually my cardio routine, is I wake up in the morning and I have moderate, type of cardio, 70-80% max heart rate. You know, I fast walk on the treadmill. I go on the I bike actually a lot. I even go for jogs. I go on a cross trainer for about, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes because, you know, I just wake up in the morning, I go on an empty stomach. I'm not that energetic, so I just, that's what I do. Then I have very intense workouts as well when I try to boost my metabolism that way. And I have high-intensity interval cardio after my workouts for about anywhere between 15 to 25 minutes after my workouts. I just go, I do like about a minute, you know, normal pace, regular pace, and a minute fast pace. And that works. That worked for me. That worked really, really well. I like, because, you know, when you do cardio, for example, for bodybuilding show, and I was doing cardio 7 times a week, well, actually 7 days a week, and multiple times a day sometimes, you want to keep it, you want to vary your workout. So I wouldn't say there's a bad or good way of doing cardio. In my opinion, you know, the fact of doing cardio is good enough. However, as you said, I kind of prefer the high-intensity interval training, and that's the kind of training I incorporate in my off-season training as well. After my workouts, I always have some cardio and some high-intensity type of cardio, and that works really, really good. That doesn't go like a lot of people, and a lot of people involved in bodybuilding and fitness, they're afraid to lose muscle if they do cardio, which is completely wrong. I mean, you're not going to lose muscle, actually, and after your workout, you know, having a really high intensity level, your growth hormone levels are the highest after your workout. So that's actually the best, one of the best times to do your cardio. And high intensity is just going to, you know, get more calories burned and really attack your fat storage primarily. So high intensity seems to be working great. I kind of like, I keep that approach of cardio a little bit, you know, all year long. And then the intensity of your workouts plays a lot as well. So keep your workouts intense. That will be the key. Then if you're dieting for bodybuilding or something like that, or fat loss, you know, you can incorporate more, you know, moderate type of cardio again. But you know, I kind of like the high intensity type of training for sure. So I hope, you know, we clarified that. It's good to have, you know, different opinions and different, you know, approach to training, because we have different backgrounds. We did different, you know, types of competitions and everything. So it's good to see, you know, what everybody, because there's no bad answer to it. It's just different approach, and you got to find what works for you, basically. So we said that there was another one as far as cardio goes. If I can find another one, nice. I had this one about, actually it's a mix between training and nutrition. Hey guys, I was just wondering if krill oil is better than fish oil. And also I haven't worked out for about 3 months now, and I just started again. And after my first workout on Monday, I'm very sore, even though I did everything to help with recovery. I know it has little to do with me not working out for a long time, but how long will it take until I don't get sore for over 2-3 days after my workouts, Andre? Well, actually, it has a lot to do with you not training for about 3 months. I don't know, like, Elliot or Mike, do you want to add up to it?
Well, I mean, we don't know a lot of the variables to this question. I don't know what kind of food he's eating. I don't know how often he slept. I don't know what kind of workout he did that got him this sore. I don't know. So, I mean, those are some of the variables that are going to play into effect about how sore you're getting. The fact that you haven't worked out in 3 months, that's going to do something. If you just go balls to the wall and just go crazy in your first workout, you might be sore for like 4 or 5 days. My advice is do some foam rolling and just, you know, work through this. It's going to take probably, I'm guessing, depending, it'll take about 1 to 2 weeks, and you won't be getting a sore anymore at all from whatever workout you're doing right now. Once your body gets used to it again, just make sure you're drinking enough water, flushing your system, getting enough sleep, keeping your stress down, and those are just some basic recommendations. If you're getting way too sore and you just don't like it, it's not dangerous for you or anything, but if it's just uncomfortable, just, you know, lower the intensity for a little bit until you get used to it.
Oh, you know, you got it right, Mike. I mean, it's always like that. Whether you're like, when you stop training for a while, whether it's like 2-3 weeks, in his case, 3 months, for sure you're going to get sore, and you're going to get a little bit actually more sore than if you were, you know, working every day or working out every day or, you know, like four or five times a week, for example. Your body, as I said, your body get used to it. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like if you, when you first start, you know, working out, you know, the pain must have been, you know, 4 or 5 days. You would have been in pain. Well, that's kind of the same thing. So your body is going to get used to it. So yes, of course, because you haven't worked out in a while, that's what happens. That being said, if your nutrition is in check, that's something you can avoid. Like, you're going to repair your muscles a little bit faster, actually, than if your nutrition is not in check. So that's actually a good thing. As far as the krill oil question goes, in my opinion, I'm more of a fan of krill oil. Fish oil is good, don't get me wrong. I mean, fish oil is not bad. Like, I mean, I like krill oil a little bit better because it has krill has a very powerful antioxidant, which is called astaxanthin. And it's hard to say, astaxanthin. And that's a very, very powerful antioxidant. And that's actually, this one increases your strength and endurance a little bit more. So overall, you're looking at more better quality with krill oil rather than fish oil. However, I mean, yes, it's better quality, but don't stress too much over it. If you can only get fish oil is great, but krill oil is still a little bit better overall than fish oil. But both are really good. That's all I can say. So don't overstress about it. There's not a huge difference. You know, that's not going to make up for your results. So both are really good. Krill oil a little bit better. We can maybe move on to some nutrition questions. We got about 20 minutes now. Let me see. We're going to have to skim about like taking the more relevant questions.
Let me grab the one. It's not nutrition, but they're asking about how strength and muscle size is related. He was talking about how his friend has bigger muscles than him.
Oh, that's right. That's the one I wanted to there you go. Maybe you can read this one, Mike.
Yeah. This is from Bradley. How much are strength and muscle size related? I have friends which are weaker than me, but they have bigger muscles than me, and they grow faster. Some fitness gurus also preach that the weight on the bar doesn't matter. They preach to go lighter, but really feel and focus mainly on the muscle. As a powerlifter, what are your thoughts on strength to muscle size relation and part on the weight on the bar doesn't matter? All right, first things first. Sometimes you have guys that have really big muscles that are not as strong as they look because there's more to strength than just your muscle strength. When it comes to strength, there's other things. When you're training for strength, you're also training your nervous system, being able to handle that weight, get used to that weight, and adapt to the weight. You also have to get your bones stronger over time, and your tendons and ligaments have to keep up with the weight also. That's why if you see some guys that abuse steroids and they get their muscles very big, very fast, they'll wind up hurting themselves or pulling something, and that's because the tendons and the ligaments haven't had a chance to gradually get as strong, since the steroids don't affect those the same way. So the reason some of your friends, you might be stronger than them is because you've been training with the weight longer than them, but maybe they're just prone to grow better than you are, or they've been eating more than you have. So I would say it's better for you to be stronger, but to try to get the best of both worlds. I mean, do you really want to have artificially inflated muscles? Do you want to be someone that looks like they're strong, but then they're not? So, I mean, it looks like you're in a good position, and you can definitely put on some muscle size, and you have that to your advantage. As far as the fitness gurus preaching that weight on the bar doesn't matter, I mean, there's all different goals that people are training for. I mean, if you're not trying to get stronger and you're not trying to grow muscle, I mean, maybe this has something to do with a sport they're training people for. I mean, or they might be talking about volume training, which is another theory of doing lots and lots of reps for lots and lots of sets. And there's guys that have had success training that way, getting bigger muscles. So again, this goes back to my whole approach of power building, where I like having the show with the go, where you're strong and you look strong, not just looking strong. So if you do some of the compound heavy movements with lower reps and then supplement that with some more isolation exercises and do a little bit higher rep range for that. That could be something you can tweak and try out and see if that builds some muscle. You're going to need plenty of protein. That's another question that comes in later on here. We'll talk about how much protein is needed, but most people are not eating enough protein. So that's going to help your muscles grow and recover.
Well, exactly, a very good point, Mike. And that's a sad reality, but we're not all equal when it comes to muscle growth. Genetics play a big part, you know what I mean? We're not all born the same. Some people have to work harder than others. I can take, you know, my own experience, for example. Like me and one of my best friends and regular training partner, Remy, we started training at the same time about 10 years ago. And both, you know, we all followed pretty much all, we're all very dedicated people. We eat well, we train hard, and we have pretty much the same approach of training and everything. But Remy's so much bigger now, and we're both natural athletes. And you would see him and see, oh, wow, he's so much bigger. What is he doing? He just has better genetics. But, you know, he still works hard for what he got. But we're not all born equal when it comes to, you know, the ability to build muscle. And you have, you know, that's something, you know, that you have to understand. That being said, the fact that you're stronger, and Mike has a very valid point on this one, it's an advantage on your side. I'm a big believer that, you know, the stronger you're going to get, the more developed you can, the more muscles you can build, pretty much. So again, you should take that into your advantage and see maybe, you know, there's something not right with the way you eat or the way you train or the way you sleep or whatever it is, but just maybe find out what would make the difference. And with that advantage in hand, you know, capitalize on it for more muscle growth, pretty much. Vary your workouts, maybe. I don't know what it is. And again, I don't know about your friends. Maybe they're chemically enhanced, as Mike said, you know, yeah, their muscles are big, but, you know, they kind of developed so too quickly, and your muscles on their side, you know, are more, I would say, mature compared to them, and you have probably better room for potential than these guys. So, again, you know, don't overstress about it and maybe find what's lacking in your training, whether it's in your program, whether it's nutrition or training or sleep or supplementation, whatever it could be. Just trying to, and then take the advantage of that, the fact that you're strong, to try to build more more muscle that way.
Yeah, you have to experiment a little bit. I mean, different rep ranges and different people respond differently. I mean, Elliot's trained some baseball players. I'll let him talk more about that, but training them down at strength camp, he was got some pretty good muscle growth doing some higher reps with some of the kids, and I had the exact opposite experience where in college I came in as a freshman weighing 190 pounds playing free safety, and I had always done 8 to 12 reps. It's just what I had learned from reading the magazines and from the people I was hanging out with and what I was doing. When I got to college, somebody told me, hey, start doing reps of sets of 3 reps, start doing sets of 4 reps. I started doing that, and I blew up. In a matter of 4 years, by my senior year, I was 230 pounds. So actually for me, that's like 4 or 5 years. It took a little time to put the weight on, but for me, lowering the reps, I got bigger. But that might not be the same way for you. So that's why, you know, try doing both in your workouts and see what you respond to.
Exactly. It's a good way. Variation, I mean, vary your workouts and find out what works for you. We're all different. We all react different to different type of training. What works for me might not work for something else, for someone else. My diet or type of nutrition might work for me, but not for someone else. So you really have to experiment with it. Have to be patient as well. I mean, bodybuilding or fitness in general, like it's something that doesn't happen overnight. It takes dedication. It takes time. So again, find out what really works for you. And once you find, you know, a good balance between training and nutrition and so on, you're going to see the results, and those are going to be ongoing results for sure. So, no, very good point, Mike. Thank you for that input. There's nutrition question I would like to answer is a question about, I don't have the name of that person. She says, I have the last 10 to 15 pounds of stubborn body fat in my midsection. I'm 31-year-old female. How long should I do abs workout per week, and how would I know I've overworked my abs? Is protein shake essential to get flat midsection. Thanks in advance. Well, that's the thing, and that's a big misconception, that the more, you know, you're going to train your abs, the flatter your midsection is going to be, and the more body fat is going to, you're going to lose, you know, in the midsection by doing abs workout. You see all these commercials, you know, the ab roller, the ab whatever on TV, promising that you're going to get a flat stomach by rotating on chair. I mean, come on. That's spot reduction, unfortunately, doesn't exist. Although there's theories about it that, you know, spot reduction could, you know, some manipulations within cardio and exercise could result in spot reduction. I'm still not a believer, and I'm still waiting on the actual, you know, research and more stronger research to be done and studies to be done about it. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as my knowledge goes, spot reduction doesn't exist. So the fact that you're doing more ab workout is not going to translate into a flatter stomach and you losing, you know, the body fat in your midsection. Diet is going to help you losing those 10 to 15 stubborn body fat pounds that you have in your midsection. So what I would recommend you is to have actually a very strong nutrition plan planned out in order to reduce that body fat. Usually, you know, the type of low carb, not no carb, I'm not a big fan of keto diet, but a low carbohydrate diet with high to moderate protein, high to moderated fats seems to be working very well. Again, and you have to add, you know, you have to burn your calories pretty much because we're all storing fats at different places. Women, it's probably going to be around the hips, the legs, in your case, the midsection. Guys, usually it's in the midsection. And that's the part, the last 10 pounds, really 5 to 10 pounds, is always, you know, at that stubborn part. So in my, if I can say, like, in my case, I always, the same thing, it's the midsection, and my last 10 pounds are always in my midsection. So what I do, you know, I just get a proper meal plan, I lower my calories, lower my carbohydrates, get a little bit more cardio, and create a caloric deficit. And that way I can burn that stubborn body fat and I can see my abs. Abs are there. Yes, you have to work them out, you know, but I work out my abs, I would say, twice a week maybe. You know what I mean? And usually that's enough. So you don't have to overwork your abs in order to get a flat stomach. Just focus probably on nutrition. Mike and Elliot, any thoughts about it?
There are a couple things to consider. If it's your last 10 pounds, you got to consider that whatever you did up until that point is not going to work any longer. So you've got to completely change your mind with regard to diet and exercise. I can't tell you if it means you've got, because there are two ways you can go with this. If whatever you're doing up until this point has worked, you can go either where you have to work harder, like, you know, you're genetically gifted and you kind of put like a half effort and you got to a certain point and you're good. Now you got to turn up the heat. You got to work. You got to be that much more disciplined. I mean, there's absolutely no cheating with your diet. You got to be on point with like nailing the calories and nailing all the lifestyle things, drinking enough water, getting to sleep on time, just being super meticulous, or the absolute opposite, which sounds as strange as it sounds. You may be like totally sympathetically dominated at this point, and you're just like your body's stressed out, and it's kicking back on you. It's almost doing like a reversal on you, and all of your efforts you've reached a point of diminishing returns. And a lot of times, with regard to your hormonal system, it's almost like it's trying to save you now because you're in such a state of stress that it's just not letting you burn the rest of the fat because it thinks you're starving and you're going to die. And if we burn this fat, you're just absolutely not going to survive the next famine. And God, for God's sakes, you're a woman and you should be able to have your period and you might want to have a child someday. And if your body fat goes any lower, you're going to lose the baby or you'll never be able to get pregnant or something like that. So it's just it's all like evolution survival shit going on there. And in that, if that's the case, then as weird as it sounds, you might have to back off a little bit. Back off, you may be overtraining. Back off the training just a little bit. Take a vacation. Relax. You know, try to do something that's not as hyperactive and as like as crazy as you may have been behaving up until this point. So I can't tell you where you are with regard to that, but it's going to be, it's definitely not what you're doing right now, and it's going to be one of those two things. But if you're, I can tell you right now that if you're stressed out, you're not sleeping enough, you're dehydrated, and you're training like a maniac, then that's your problem. You've got to back off a little bit. If your heart rate is just like through the roof and you're doing nothing but drinking diet soda and ice chips all day long, then yeah, that's your freaking problem. You think that's what's good because it got you where you're at, but that's your problem. So back off and start treating your body a little bit healthier and chill out.
There you go. You have a very good valid point here, Elliot, is that the fact sometimes that people are overstressed and put so much pressure on themselves, you know, lack probably some sleep, it's a huge factor actually in the results you're going to get. You said it earlier, we live in a very stressful society, and in my opinion, you know, stress kills more people every year than we can think about. It's actually, I think it's the biggest cause of death in North America, well, especially North America, because we live a very stressful lifestyle. And I mean, you know, sometimes just the fact of relaxing, putting things into perspective, and try to avoid that stress, that unnecessary stress we put in our lives, it's going to play a huge role in your results as far as body fat or muscle gains are going to go. So again, I'm a firm believer, just like you, Elliot, that avoiding unnecessary stress is a key component to success, pretty much. We're going to have time to one last question now, and I wanted to get your input about this one as well. I don't have the name of that person again, but it says, if I were to go on a mass building program involving a 2-week to 1-week high to low calorie cycle, could I basically eat whatever I want during the 2 high calorie weeks without having to worry about too much fat gain? Yes, I would worry about what you eat, because that's, if you're taking the approach that, you know, I need to bulk, the bulking approach, and for those who know me, I'm against that term, bulking. I think that's the most ridiculous term invented for bodybuilding. It's pretty much an excuse for bodybuilders to get fat. And, you know, they say, I'm going to bulk, I'm going to eat whatever, gain more muscle. Yeah, but you're going to gain a boatloads of fat, of body fat. If you go that way and not worry about your eating, all the body fat you're going to gain during these 2 weeks, you're not going to be able to make up for it in that 1 week period. So what's going to result is that you're going to get fat. I would worry about getting, yes, if you want to cycle that way, you can absolutely have high calorie, you know, more calories for these 2 weeks and then go on a lower, low calorie week. That's perfectly fine, but focus on good sources of foods, not having an excuse to bulk and go to McDonald's every day. So just have a little bit more, but not too much. Maybe, you know, maybe 500 to 1,000 calories more, maybe, depending on your metabolism and how hard you train. But don't go too crazy. Just focus on getting a little bit more of high-quality foods, and then, you know, a little less of these high-quality foods during that 1 week of lower calories. If you go by the principles, again, that you need to bulk and you don't have to worry about what you eat, it's a perfect recipe to failure, in my opinion. What do you think about it, guys?
I'll go ahead. I agree. I mean, you can't eat whatever you want. That could be a ton of food. I mean, you could definitely put on a lot of fat doing that. I agree. The next week when your calories are low, I don't think you're going to wind up losing that fat. I'm not a fan of bulking or really cutting as well. I'd say try to get onto a moderate, healthy diet that you can live with, and you know, it'd be much more strategic to have a cheat day or a cheat meal sometimes just to keep you on schedule with this style of eating and just, you know, make gradual gains of putting on lean muscle and burning fat. I mean, this kind of sounds like a zigzag type approach, which might have been something that the woman in the previous question might have wanted to try, where she seemed like she was fighting some kind of starvation mechanism in her body, where maybe if she added more calories than she's used to, that might have been something to throw her off so that she could stimulate some fat burning again. But as far as for bulking and cheating that bad for 1 week. I mean, increasing your calories for a week, I mean, that's one thing if you're doing it by a few hundred calories a day or something, but if all of a sudden you're eating a large pizza all day long whenever you feel like it, that you can't do that for that long without putting on fat.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, like, there's different ways of approaching, you know, the rotation of calories. You know, you can go on, for example, like the extreme fat loss diet is a very good short-term, you know, fat loss diet that you can use that rotates, you know, high calories, no calories, protein only, fast days. I mean, there's cheat days as well. So different variations of calorie intake that are going to bring some results. I'm a big fan of, you know, the strategic cheat meal, which is, or cheat day, if you can do it, is just, you know, eating completely clean all week, depending on your result, on your goal, and then have a cheat meal, you know, to pretty much revive your metabolism. And that worked for me really well. That's a strategy I use during my pre-contest diets, is I incorporate a cheat meal every week, and that works wonders for me. Doesn't work for other people, though. It's very, you have to test it. The two-week high-calorie, 1 week low-calorie, that works as well. A little bit more difficult to manage, but again, it's a good way of seeing things. I know Lee Hayward's a big fan of it, you know, getting on a muscle building cycle, training wise and nutrition wise for 2 to 3 weeks, followed by a micro fat loss cycles, and that works actually pretty well. Your program needs to be very specific, a little bit more harder to handle than on the short. On a short period of time, but there's no that's something you have to try. But as far as food qualities and eating whatever you want, it's a big no-no. You can't do that. Just focus on high-quality foods and regulate your intake. Don't go crazy. That's a big mistake I've made early, you know, when I started training. I bulked up, and that's, you know, I thought that was under the old bodybuilding mentality that you need to bulk and then cut. And let me tell you, that's the biggest mistake I ever made, and I will never do that again. That's why I'm very against that term about bulking. And again, that for me, that's just an excuse bodybuilders give themselves to get fat. That's it. They're fat. They're saying, oh, I'm bulking. Yeah, whatever. It's just an excuse for me. So don't go that route. Try to stay, you know, in check with your nutrition. You can absolutely rotate your calories, but don't overdo it. That's all I have to say. So it's been 90 minutes, guys. I think, you know, that's all the times we have for tonight. Mike and Elliot, thank you very much once again for joining us tonight, guys. That's very much appreciated that you could, you know, join us on the call and give us your input and your knowledge tonight. So thank you very much, guys. And for the people that are still listening, the play posted tomorrow. Play tomorrow.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having us, Dave. It was fun.
So guys, anytime, and we're probably going to have the opportunity to do something like that in the future. So I cool. wish you guys a good night, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care, guys.
Later, Muscle Cook fans.
Bye-bye.
Peace.